But I know some folks who were like, oh my gosh, can you believe it? The head of the FBI, blah, blah. I was like, it's not like his office got hacked into by Jason Bourne and we were being given the public account of it, right? Dude had an older email. It's embarrassing for sure. It's probably expected of some individuals, to be frank.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast, weekly Intel chat. My name is Christopher Luft. I'm one of the co-founders of Lima Charlie, and I will be your host. Joining me today to break down the cybersecurity news being shared by the awesome InfoSec community is the one and only Matt Bromley. And don't forget, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations. Think of it as a backend for your MSSP, where everything is built API first. Scale with ease and confidence as your business grows. You can start today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it. Good morning, Mr. Bromley. How are you doing today, sir?
Hey, Chris, I'm doing well. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I wanted to mention last night, I usually fall asleep with a podcast going, and I forgot to like have it shut off after an hour. And so I woke up in the middle of the night listening to your voice.
Yikes.
Because our podcast episode had started playing. And I just wanted to say, we sound like a real podcast.
I'm all for it. I like it, man. That's great stuff to hear. I love hearing those things. I got some fun news to share for you, Chris, actually.
Okay.
I'm coming to you live from Orlando, Florida, hence the hotel room behind me and whatnot. And not sure if anybody knows this, but yesterday, the Artemis 2 mission began, launching astronauts off into space to go around the moon. And I could see it through that window right there.
Oh, wow. So wow.
Very,
I watched it on YouTube.
Appropriately timed. Yeah. I was able to see, I'll send you a picture later. I was able to see the fireball in the sky, the actual fireball going up. It was pretty cool.
Amazing. Yeah. Maxime, our CEO, even mentioned in the Slack channel the other day that maybe the next all hands team gathering will be there when they send folks to the moon. So maybe we'll come down and watch the next ones.
That would be cool. That would actually be pretty awesome. Not going to lie. Yeah, I would hope you guys get to see that.
Yeah. NASA is quite an amazing organization, but we can leave that conversation.
Incredible some of the things they do.
Awesome. So I think we may have a recurring section relating to the situation in Iran going forward. There's just so much content around that. So I'm going to start with the first one. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, or the IRGC, announced that it plans to begin attacks on more than a dozen American technology companies operating across the Middle East starting after 8 p.m. Tehran time on April 1st. The warning posted on the IRGC's Telegram channel was framed as retaliation for Iranian casualties in the ongoing war involving the United States and Israel. Companies named included Apple, Google, IBM, Intel, Microsoft, Tesla, and Boeing. The IRGC urged employees of those firms to evacuate their facilities and warned civilians to stay away from locations linked to the companies. The threat follows earlier attacks on American commercial infrastructure connected to the conflict. On March 1st, Iranian drones struck two Amazon Web Services data centers and damaged another in the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain.
Bahrain,
come in. All right. These incidents are the first publicly confirmed attacks on hyperscale cloud infrastructure owned by U.S. companies. The damage caused wider disruptions because redundancy systems were taken offline, leading to outages affecting banking sites, payment processors, and other consumer services across the region. Earlier in the month, the IRGC-affiliated Tasnim News Agency published a list identifying 29 regional offices and data centers belonging to companies including Amazon, Google, IBM, NVIDIA, and Palantir. The organizations were accused of supporting U.S. military and intelligence operations. The IRGC claims commercial technology providers enabled U.S.-Israel targeting operations that led to the killing of Iran's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, at the start of the war. This reflects how private technology infrastructure is increasingly integrated into military operations. For example, Palantir provides data architecture for Project Maven, a Pentagon AI program used to process drone and satellite imagery to identify airstrike targets. The situation highlights the scale of U.S. technology infrastructure in the Gulf, where companies have invested billions as the region positions itself as a future hub for AI development. At the same time, the U.S. military has been targeting IRGC drone networks believed to support these attacks, releasing footage of airstrikes on mobile launch systems. However, the pace of those operations has slowed as the U.S. pauses strikes on Iran's energy infrastructure to explore possible peace talks, while the Pentagon reportedly considers deploying up to 10,000 additional troops to the region. So, wow, man, this is such a
get real now.
Yeah, it's wild, and I know it's still sort of contained to the region, but like they're naming these companies, and you know, I know they have sleeper cells the world throughout, and so I wonder how long it is until we actually see some kind of terrorist operation on U.S. soil.
I'll be honest with you, Chris. Obviously, I hope it's never. That being said, it's tough to tell what this is going to escalate and turn into. It really is. It's hard to know what we're going to see, what type of escalations we might have to deal with. We've already talked about it on a cyber front multiple times now in this podcast. Exploring a kinetic option is just scary, in my opinion. I really wouldn't want to even get to them. You know, I wouldn't want to even think about a kinetic operation. I didn't even want to think about the cyber operations taking place. And unfortunately, now here we are. I do think that, you know, this style of warfare, and I'm no warfare expert in any way, shape or form, but this style of like, how much can you do hands off before you get there? But I think I think Iran is now retaliating the way they I don't want to say the way they should, but the way they know how to, which is like, all right, well, we'll start to strike fear as well. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we talked about the cyber component of this, but now we're talking about employee evacuations, clearing out certain parts of the region and things like that. And it's just it's a sad scenario. It really is. And I'm not taking any political stance on it. Just it's sad in general when humans can't figure out their differences. And it's tough to see, especially with what's going on from like a Strait of Hormuz stop, you know, what's happening there, what's happening to the dollar, the petrodollar, what's happening to the price of oil around the world. And it's having a lot of ripple effects. It's everywhere. And it's not just you and me talking about the latest cyber threat actors. I think it's being felt by people all over the globe.
Yeah, and that contrast is so part of, I think, what gets me all the time is like, on the one hand, we're going back to the moon, you know, like, can we focus on that? And like, maybe like cancer and like, you know,
it was a very welcome break last night to look at a rocket carrying astronauts to the moon, as opposed to talking about rockets doing other things, for sure.
Yeah,
it was a much welcome break and I appreciated having it. And I would agree with you. It's a massive juxtaposition, of course. The planning to go to the moon had significantly more planning than the planning to invade Iran did. One of these,
my daily scrum this morning had more planning than the planning
Me getting in the elevator to get to my hotel room to get on this call with you had more planning and operational preparedness than that might have. But that being said, jokes aside, it's still a tough situation for a lot of folks, and I'd rather focus on the moon. I'd rather focus on us sending astronauts up. But unfortunately, that is a massive benefit for science. Everything else is having a negative effect on society. And Chris, I think you and I will be talking about it for a while. I think Iran's going to continue to keep a place in this show, if you will, or its own segment, if you'd like.
Yeah. Well, this next one, I had a little bit of a chuckle around. A pro-Iranian hacking group known as Handala has claimed responsibility for breaching a personal account belonging to FBI Director Kash Patel. The group posted a message online stating that Patel, who once had his name displayed at FBI headquarters, would now see his name added to the list of successful hacking victims. Along with the message, the group released several photographs of Patel and claimed to have made emails and documents from his account available for download. Many of the materials posted by the hacker appear to be old, including personal photos and documents such as a resume and travel-related records. According to reports, much of the information dates back more than a decade. The leaked content included images of Patel posing with an antique sports car and another of him smoking a cigar. The hackers indicated that the leaked files came from a compromised email account tied to him. The FBI did not initially comment publicly on the incident. However, a person familiar with the matter confirmed that a personal email account belonging to Patel had been breached. Authorities also indicated that the compromised data was not recent. Previous reporting from December 2024 suggested that Patel had already been warned that he was a potential target of Iranian cyber operations. Handala describes itself as a pro-Iranian, pro-Palestinian hacking group and was previously claimed responsibility for cyber attacks against other organizations. Earlier in the same month, the group said it disrupted systems at Stryker, a Michigan-based medical technology company, in retaliation for suspected U.S. strikes that reportedly killed Iranian schoolchildren. U.S. officials consider groups like Handala to be proxy actors that carry out cyber operations aligned with Iranian government interests. The Justice Department recently referenced Handala while announcing the seizure of several domains linked to Iranian hacking campaigns targeting dissidents. So, yeah, I mean, more embarrassing than anything on this one, you could tell it was it's probably like a forgotten Gmail or Hotmail account kind of thing. But like embarrassing, you know, this guy's the head of the FBI. For him to have some low hanging fruit for threat actors like this to get at is just embarrassing for the organization, I think.
I don't know. It's a little bit par for the course these days. And I'm trying to be very, I don't know what the word is here, polite, if you will, Chris, but like a lot of, I think, kind of data privacy and just kind of general courtesy and whatnot of how to handle sensitive data has really gone out the window. I'm not saying an individual deserves to get hacked, please. It's not the thing that I'm saying whatsoever. It just doesn't surprise me that it was this easy to break in. That's what I'm trying to get at, is unfortunately, sometimes individuals act in very cavalier, very brazen ways. And that's often the inverse projection of how they handle their personal security and things like that and whatnot. And in this situation right here, we have this weird, odd scenario where you have a high profile person who has their account breached, but there is not really any proof that it was current. I think a lot of the data was very old, business travels and things like that from 10 years ago. It might have been an inactive email. I don't think there was a point where it was his private email. Work email and things like that. So maybe it was just a non-existent account, had a weak password or something in place. And Chris, this is where I'm kind of like, okay, like, so what? I mean, you know, I'm actually teaching a class this week, and I asked the students in my class, if you remember back when the Daily Mail was hacking celebrity voicemails. I don't know if you remember this or not, but they were basically doing it by logging in with the default password of quad zeros. And it was like, ooh, we hacked in. And it's like, I don't know if I'd go that far. So like an old email account, older stuff, yes, it's definitely a little bit of egg on the face, but I don't know if that throws the entire Federal Bureau of Investigation under any sort of additional scrutiny other than, hey man, secure your stuff and let's move on.
Yeah, just embarrassing, if anything.
Yeah, exactly. And that's about it. And I know some folks who were kind of looking at this like, and you and I weren't making this claim, but I know some folks who were like, oh my gosh, can you believe it? The head of the FBI, blah, blah. I was like, it's not like his office got hacked into by Jason Bourne and we were being given the public account of it, right? Dude had an older email. It's embarrassing for sure. It's probably expected of some individuals, to be frank, but hugely damning and detrimental. I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah. I had a chuckle.
Yeah. That's about it. You'll get a chuckle out of it.
Yeah. All right. So next up, some real serious stuff here. A newly discovered malware as a service platform called Venom Stealer is automating the creation and deployment of click-fix style social engineering attacks, significantly lowering the barrier for cyber criminals. Researchers from Black Frog reported that the tool provides an end-to-end pipeline that handles everything from the initial user infection to credential theft, cryptocurrency wallet access, and data exfiltration. The developer behind the platform, operating under the name Venom Stealer, is selling access on... It sounds like my six-year-old boy named this. is selling access on cybercrime forums through a subscription model priced at $250 per month or $1,800 for lifetime access. The service includes a vetted application process, Telegram-based licensing, and an affiliate program that offers a 15% commission. What distinguishes Venom Stealer from typical information-stealing malware such as Luma, Vidar, or Redline is its built-in automation of the click-fix attack method. Click-fix attacks rely on tricking users into executing malicious commands themselves. Venom includes multiple template designs to facilitate this interaction, including fake Cloudflare CAPTCHA pages, fake operating system updates, SSL certificate error prompts, and fake font installation requests. Victims are instructed to open a run dialog or terminal window, paste a command, and execute it. Because the victim initiates the command, the process appears user-generated, allowing it to bypass some security detection methods that rely on monitoring suspicious process relationships. Once executed, the payload begins harvesting data from the infected system. The malware scans Chromium and Firefox-based browsers to extract saved passwords, session cookies, browsing history, and autofill data. It also searches for cryptocurrency wallet data and stored secrets. The attack collects additional system information, including browser extension inventories and system fingerprints, which help attackers build detailed profiles of infected machines. The stolen data is immediately transmitted off the device, minimizing local artifacts and making detection harder without strong monitoring or outbound network traffic. Venom Stealer also introduces persistent data theft capabilities that extend beyond the initial compromise. Instead of executing once and exiting, the malware continues monitoring browser credential databases and captures newly saved login data in real time. The platform also includes a server-side GPU-powered cracking system that attempts to unlock cryptocurrency wallets such as MetaMask, Phantom, Exodus, and Bitcoin Core. A recent update added a tool that searches a victim's file system for seed phrases or password files and feeds them into the cracking pipeline. This persistence means credential rotations alone may not stop the compromise if the malware remains active on the device. To reduce exposure to threats like Venom Stealer, researchers recommend limiting PowerShell execution, disabling the run dialog for standard users through group policy, and training employees to recognize click-fix-style social engineering prompts. Monitoring outbound network traffic is also critical because the attack relies on transmitting stolen data from infected machines to external servers. No breakthroughs in technology here, but just like somebody making it real easy for other people to jump in and try and steal from other folks. So
that's the part I'm not a fan of, Chris, is that part where people are creating streamlined pipelines for handling and dealing with this type of stuff. And I guess it's only a matter of time. Right. It's only a matter of time where we probably should have expected to see this happen. We've got a lot of organization and a lot of, business minded processes landing and taking places with other types of threat actors and threat groups. We've seen it with ransomware for a very, very, very long time. We probably should expect to see it here, too. It is becoming very, very prevalent. We know it is very prevalent. Click fix, crash fix, all these fix style pop up things have been kind of all over the place. And now here we are, malware as a service helping to automate every step of the way. And it lowers the barrier to entry, unfortunately, and makes it more possible for people to send these types of attacks out there in the wild and how to do them and whatnot. But this is also a relatively newer technique there, Chris. Only about 2 years ago is when Proofpoint first spotted this. And since then, it's just grown in popularity. And you want to guess why?
It works. Yeah,
it works. If it ain't broke, don't need to fix it. Right? And I think, this is probably just a natural progression in the business of handling malware of just simply, hey, let's organize ourselves around this thing. Maybe we can make a little bit of money in the process. To me, this is just standard commoditization that we see within a lot of other threat groups and a lot of other malware style things where someone figures out, hey, I can get inside of the development process or the delivery process or the crafting process, and I don't need to be the one that sends the malware. I can be the one that helps create the package, and maybe I can get a little bit of money on the side. In fact, maybe I can make even more money. It's a little bit safer for me to make more money here. And if I make the thing that you use to steal $1 million, maybe you give me 10%, or maybe I'll charge 5% upfront, knowing you're going to have some success here. So there's multiple different ways to frame this one. And definitely certain ways for folks to make money. And that's what I think we're seeing is we're just going to see a consistent kind of, business mind on top of this.
Yeah, it will continue. This last one, it caught my attention because, they really know.
Sad.
Yeah, they know no bounds. The cyber criminals know no bounds. So toy and entertainment company Hasbro disclosed that it experienced a cyber attack that disrupted some of its internal operations. In a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the company said it detected unauthorized access to its network on March 28th. As part of its response, Hasbro has taken certain systems offline while it investigates the incident and works to secure the environment. The company has engaged external cybersecurity experts to assist with the investigation and determine the full scope of the breach. One of the key goals is to assess whether attackers were able to access or compromise any company files or sensitive data. At this stage, Hasbro has not confirmed whether the information was stolen, and the investigation remains ongoing. Hasbro said it has implemented business continuity measures to maintain core operations during the incident response process. These interim procedures are allowing the company to continue taking orders, shipping product, and conducting other essential business activities while systems are restored. However, the company warned that these temporary measures could remain in place for several weeks and may cause some operational delays. Based on the limited details provided, the attack may involve ransomware combined with data theft, a tactic commonly used by cybercrime groups. No extortion group has yet claimed responsibility for the attack. However, security researchers note that threat actors often wait before publicly listing victims on leak sites, typically doing so only after ransom negotiations fail or stall. Hasbro said it will take further actions, including potential notifications, depending on the findings of the ongoing investigation. So, yeah, this is one of those legally mandated SEC filings that need to take place within 4 days of the breach because they're a publicly traded company. And because lawyers are going to lawyer, they didn't give away too many details. And that's probably the last we'll hear of this one, I suspect.
Yeah, we might hear more. But what's more surprising here, and I got to say surprising, just given the current landscape that's out there, Chris, this is the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. Of a cyber breach notification. It's not the bare minimum in an investigation, but it is the bare minimum in a notification where the company basically does, all right, SEC says we need to file an 8K, let's file an 8K. And that's kind of all they did in this case. And it even says, like, we are just satisfying the requirement that we have suffered a cyber attack on March 28th. Now, it is a relatively quick turnaround of a filing, which is great because this was only 5 days ago. However, even still, it creates a very, very interesting position of like, oh, wow, like that's it. That's all we know. We can't really ask for much more at this stage, though. One of the things that's been pretty consistent is whenever a company does fall under a cyber attack, they're usually pretty close-lipped about the details. They don't want to let people know. They don't want copycats to show up. They don't want adversaries to know what's happening.
Scares stockholders.
They don't want to do any of that kind of stuff, even though this statement will do exactly that. But it is actually the way that notifications are supposed to happen, which is wild. We get very used to those, you know, very fancy, flashy press briefings with marketing materials and that kind of stuff. And this was about as plain as it could be. It was the official required channel of notification. So maybe this is how it looks in the future of just, hey, we've gone through a breach and here's that particular thing. And we'll fill you in if and when we need to fill you in. But otherwise, we're not doing it. And this has actually been a really hot topic of discussion with my students this week, because we do talk about incident management notifications and give you things of companies who do very, you know, proud and loud announcements. We are defending against security and stuff. And then you get ones like this where it's very much like, hey, we got breached. And it's just very a slick little whisper across the table.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I guess it's a short one today. I don't know. Feeling a little like I should get back to what I was doing.
That's all right. Hey, not everyone is going to be full of the world's most earth-shaking articles. Sometimes we just have to accept that we will be talking about malware and toy companies getting hacked, man. That's the one that hurts the most. I have a long history with Hasbro. We all do.
Mr. Potato Head, come on.
Exactly. You know, that was the foundation of a lot of good times for a lot of kids. I mean, come on. Do you adversaries have, like, did you not have Hasbro kids as a Hasbro toys as a kid? Like, did you not? There's so many roads to go down of disappointment here.
Yeah. All right, Matt. I'm sure we'll have more to talk about next week. Hopefully positive. Maybe we'll focus on, like, some people going to jail. That always cheers me up.
We need a good
little
takedown, Chris. That's
right. All right. Okay, sir.
All right, sir. Take care.
Yeah, bye.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the end of another Intel Chat. You can support this show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend or subscribing and giving us a rating or leaving a comment on your chosen podcast platform. If you want to be part of the conversation and access the intel we talk about in real time, you can join our community forum at community.limacharlie.io. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you on the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.